Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. So I've just had a kind of funny I was going to call it an adventure. It's not really an adventure. It's the most times I've recorded the intro so far because I'm figuring I'm running out of time. I need to move on to something else. So of course, I'm trying to skimp on doing the intro. And of course, it's taking me the longest it's ever taken me. And I'm repeating myself like 10,000 times, realizing I didn't put in the microphone correctly, doing all these kinds of silly mistakes, and having to start over again. So it's always interesting to see the consequences of cutting corners. These are the consequences of cutting corners. So you know what, folks? Don't cut corners. It's not really worth it. And it usually takes more time in the end than you plan to do in the first place. So I should have just done it as I usually do, written out my introduction, or at least most of it. I don't write entirely, but I usually make some bullet points about exactly what I want to say so that I make sure that I don't forget anything, right? Which kind of makes sense. Anyhow, what do we got going on? It's pretty sad and, not sad, but it's just rainy in London and kind of gray. But that said, it's just after a three-day weekend and we had some lovely weather over the weekend. I was able to catch up with a bunch of different friends. I stayed in London, spent some time doing some of my favorite markets that I hadn't been to in a long time, and buying some really lovely charcuterie and some nice organic wines and really lovely cheese, and spent time with friends enjoying all of these and trying out a few different restaurants I wanted to try. So that was great. That was really lovely. And coming out of 2 weeks of pretty intense like pitch work with a few different clients, so that was cool. And got several recordings this week for the podcast, and starting, as I mentioned in the last episode, and I'm going to be talking about this some more in the next few episodes, which is wrapping up the first season of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, preparing for the summer break and preparing slowly for the second season and figuring out exactly what's going to be happening and what I'm going to be doing. So for those who aren't familiar with the show just yet, the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, I have conversations with creators, thinkers, makers, typically from areas that I'm interested in. So, it's basically like I'm interviewing people that are interesting and that I'm interested in learning more about. Typically, they tend to be around my job in marketing and brand strategy, not necessarily though, and or game design, because I'm really into, I'm very interested in game mechanics, and I'm a long time tabletop gamer, role-playing gamer, yeah. And I write a bunch of different stuff as well. So that's the idea essentially for the show, and having conversations about, how do these people get there? Who are they? What inspires them? And also just to make sure, if you listen to podcasts, if you enjoy interviews of different kinds, like, of course it's for the professionals or for the gamers, but not only. And I've had people tell me that just about everybody has told me they really, really enjoyed the geeky episodes about gaming as much as they did about brand strategy. My objective is to keep this open and enjoyable for everybody who's interested in learning about, how brands work, who's interested in hearing about interesting people, essentially, right? You can find out all the episodes and you can find out more about what I do as a marketing and brand strategist, as well as the long-form newsletter that I write called Ice Cream Sunday. All of that is on my website. That's at www.icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything spelled out, Ice Cream for Everyone. You can also find the podcast and the show and my updates on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm at HippoWill. You can give me feedback there. A couple of people lately have sent me shout-outs on Twitter that they appreciated the show, which is always nice, so don't hesitate sending out a tweet. If you can, be even really, way better super beneficial certainly for my ratings and for more people to find the show, if you can take the time to give us a rating or review on iTunes podcasts. So that's either the iPhone podcasting app or whichever podcast app you use to listen to podcasts, or going in directly into iTunes and searching for Ice Cream for Everyone and leaving a review. I know it's a bit of an effort, but if you're really into podcasts, it's worth giving a review. It makes a hell of a difference for people to get feedback, and it makes a hell of a difference for other people to be able to find the show for iTunes or other podcasting apps to recommend it. If you use Stitcher, for example, thumbs up is always useful. I use Stitcher, so I give thumbs up. And I go ahead and review the podcasts that I love, particularly since I've started podcasting, of course. All right. Anyhow, who do we got on the show today? Very, very exciting episode today. We are talking with Jim Collison, and Jim works for Gallup. Gallup is an international organization, very known, particularly in the States. It started in the early 20th century in the States they're very famous for their political polls and market research overall. Advertising legend, David Ogilvy worked there for a long time before founding his own advertising agency, now known as Ogilvy & Major, one of the largest advertising agencies, in the world, really, basically. So, and there's several branches to Gallup, and Jim explains that in detail during the whole show. And one of them is this strength-based positive psychology branch called StrengthsFinders. And it's a performance management consulting. And one branch is open for anybody who wants to take the test. And it's a test where they devised, and through all the research, a lot of research, they devised these 34 strengths that people have. And you can do the test online and find out what your top five strengths are. Okay. And the way those strengths are described is really, really interesting. I'm not going to give too much away because we talk about it during the whole episode, right? But particularly we talk about how can you use that in your everyday life? Why is it interesting to look at this particular or to look at life and performance and what you're doing in life or your career or your friends, your family, your relationships, everything that, you know, makes up your life? Why is it interesting to look at it through this strengths-based lens, if you will? And how can you use it? Because a lot of people I've talked to in the past, including myself, actually, I thought, you know, I did the test. I thought it was interesting and then forgot about it. And recently, and thanks to the podcast that Jim produces and hosts for Gallup. So he is a podcaster. Jim is a tech guy and a podcaster in the first place. He hosts a number of different podcasts. He has a podcasting network called the Average Guy Network. One is about home gadgets, and he has one about cyber frontiers. He talks about cybersecurity with a bunch of different people. He has another show called Ask the Podcast Host, where he answers questions from people about podcasting and podcasting technology. And for Gallup, he hosts one podcast called Called to Coach, where they interview strength-based coaches who work with Gallup, and another one called Theme Thursday that I really highly recommend. If you enjoy this episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, where we talk about the strengths, then check out Theme Thursdays, where in each episode, they delve deep and talk about one of the 34 strengths and examples of how it occurs for people. They talk about statistical analysis of like their database and how many people or how many percentage of people have this strength combined with this strength and what it does for people. And so anyways, really interesting. So worth it. I really, really enjoyed it. So without further ado, because I'm giving too much away, here is Jim from Gallup. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for accepting to be on the call. Really appreciate it. Is it early in the morning your time? Not too much?
No, we're just getting the days going. 9 a.m. Central time.
9 a.m. Oh, that's normal time. So yeah, that's good. Let me start with this. I've been doing a little bit of research, and you manage a network of different podcasts under the Average Guy Network. But at the same time, I've been doing all this research and like noting that you're probably anything but an average guy.
Yeah, I get that all the time. I started the brand. I really wanted to help the average guy because back in the '90s when technology was really hard and we were in Windows 95 and, you know, working your own computer was next to impossible. Not many people remember those days, but it used to be difficult, right? And before the iPhone days. And so I was blogging a ton or writing a ton or helping a ton. And I thought, man, if I just started podcasting about this stuff, I could say it once, then just point everybody over to the podcast. And so it was really for the average guy. Cause my thought is, yeah, that's where I'm going. Now, that being said, I feel like I am the average guy. I'm 6 foot tall, a shoe size 12, pants size 36. And all those sizes are sold out when I go to buy those clothes. So. I do feel like I'm the average guy, and the benefit or the, what I try to do is I try to get the above average guy on the show to help people. So it's all about getting people to help out.
Got it. All right, cool. So, and you said you started the podcast in the '90s then?
Well, no, I started helping people in the '90s. I really didn't start blogging until about 2005 or 2006 as I figured out, hey, I could write this stuff down. And then in 2009, I thought, man, I could podcast this stuff. Yeah. And so it was kind of this progression of helping people, but it was just a way to get information to help people in the most efficient manner possible.
Fantastic. All right, cool. Well, we'll definitely come back to that. And there's going to be a bunch of different topics we want to talk about. But you know, as you said, you'd listen to a couple and people would be familiar with this just going back to the beginning. So I believe you grew up in San Jose, California.
I did. I'm a Bay Area kid. Yeah. I used to say I would eat computer chips for breakfast. And so I watched, my dad was an IBMer. So I really, was immersed in the Bay Area culture as a kid, and I grew up in the South Bay near Los Gatos. And just was immersed in the tech culture kind of growing up. I wish I'd heeded to it a little bit more in my high school years. I did some things that weren't in my strengths. I tried some stuff that I wasn't very good at. I went into the military and became a mechanic when I should have went into computers at that time. And so set myself back a little bit. But yeah, growing up in the Bay Area was great. I mean, we watched Apple computers when it was nothing, right? Yeah. Steve Jobs and Wozniak start that.
Yeah.
Basically,
what do you remember about it? So you were already interested in all of this kind of stuff from the beginning then?
Yeah, I was kind of a nerd even then, and I would read the newspaper, San Jose Mercury News, which was a very tech-heavy newspaper. Mm-hmm. And my parents got it every day, and so before school, I would get the paper and I'd read the paper, sports section, check stocks, stuff like that.
Did they talk about like who's created the latest something in their garage or?
Well, sure, Apple computers was a big deal when that's funny. People think the startup culture is a new thing, and in the Bay Area, we've been doing startups since the 70s, and so. Even then, you know, no one knew what it would be. And it's hard to tell when that stuff hit because the folklore of a company like that is so strong. Certainly, yes. HP had its headquarters there. IBM had a big, we had the Santa Teresa facility was there as well. And the beginning in the early 80s of the startup boom, which was incredible to be a part of. I left in 86, but I saw a lot of that from, you know, probably like 78 to 86, maybe that first real PC boom I got to watch. It was cool. Yeah.
So were you tinkering with like a lot of hardware or like building computers or breaking them or?
I wasn't building them. I did buy a Timex Sinclair 1000, which was a little, you know, membrane keyboard. You'd plug it into the RF on your TV. And we would buy these magazines that had BASIC in them, and we would, you know, write those, and then you could store it off on a cassette tape. So I do that at home. At school, I was part of a program where we got access to Apple IIe's. And so I wrote BASIC on
it. I don't even know what that is actually.
Yeah, this is even days before the hard drives. So you would have just a floppy in there and you would store and save everything on the floppy drive. This would have been 82. Okay. And then we were the first school, because we were in the Bay Area, we were one of the first schools to get HP's early 8088s. And so again, wrote BASIC on those. The 3.5-inch floppies had just come out in those days. I remember carrying around school thinking I was the coolest thing, right? Yeah. It's like, look at this floppy. And so we wrote BASIC. I had my senior year, I had a whole class on, and that was revolutionary, right? I think this is 1985, 86, teaching high school students how to code.
Yeah.
And so I got to be a part of that.
So did it make it that because it was part of the ambient culture, it didn't feel to be aside as a kind of like geek or nerd, like in the technology? Like everybody was like in the same kind of thing, more or less?
There was still a pretty strong, I mean, when you think about it, in the middle 80s, there was still, you know, being a geek then was not as cool as it is now, right? Sure. I mean, being a nerd today is the best it's ever been, and so I embrace it fully. But in those days, there was, our school produced, we had students that worked at the Lawrence Livermore Lab, and we had some pretty smart kids. Now, I was the average. I was right in the middle of the class. I actually graduated statistically right in the middle of the class, which is pretty funny. That was kind of the beginning of that average guy thing. But we probably had a little more of a geek culture in the school then than most schools had, but it still wasn't as cool as it is today. So, but I embraced it. I loved it. The one mistake I made was when I went into the military, I didn't want to go to school right away. And so I spent some time in the military. They offered me a whole bunch of jobs, and I thought, you know, the worst thing, I took an ASVAB, right? That's kind of the military test on aptitude and what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I scored the lowest as a mechanic. And I thought, well, hey, if I'm going to be in the military for a couple of years, I might as well learn something new, right? Well, it did kind of pay off, but I wasted a whole bunch of time when I really should have gone into – we were in the military in those days. We were just starting to get PCs, and they were just starting to network, and they were just starting to implement that. And I could have been in on that movement in the military if I had followed strengths.
You probably would have gotten some top technology available at the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We would have. And I ended up working in my second tour. I ended up working with a group that had technology, and I kind of got to work with it some, but not like if I'd kind of followed my strengths and had gone in and done that to begin with. Yeah. One, a little regret. Now, you know, hey.
Because it's kind of the opposite. Yeah. I mean, it's the – we're going to talk more about the strength. I want to come back to that and keep it to the side. But what led to going into the military in the first place? What was the idea?
Oh, it was money for sure. Right, a little bit of family history. So a lot of my family had been in the military, and I wasn't exactly sure I was totally ready for college at 18 and didn't. And a buddy of mine had gone in the Army, and he kind of talked me into going. He'd gone in the year before me, and I thought, oh, this would be kind of cool. They were giving away lots of money in those days during the Reagan era. And the opportunity to maybe travel around the country, which I thought would be cool. So money and travel were one of those things, maybe a little bit of discipline, you know, and as I look back on those times, I don't regret any of it. I got to wear the uniform, which was dynamite. I still miss that uniform.
Oh, really?
My number four son is a Marine. He just went through Marine basic training here in the beginning of the year. Got back on base, and I was like, oh, I kind of miss this.
Oh, yeah?
You know, it was very cool. Oh, yeah, very much. Once you're in it, it's hard to get out. You know,
and where were you based? Did you move around? Or
Two locations. So they moved me right away to Germany. So I got to live in Schweinfurt, Germany. It was West Germany in those days. The wall was still up. And in fact, I left and 4 months later, the wall came down. So it was those days when Germany was still ununified. But I traveled all over Europe, which was awesome. I got to see, and I recommend that now. Now that I work with high school students in my job here at Gallup,
yeah,
I always recommend, hey, when you get in college, if you can study abroad, you absolutely should. There's nothing better than getting out of the United States and seeing how the rest of the world lives. And then I came back, and I was stationed in Monterey, California, which was not too far from the Bay Area. And so I got to spend time with the family. I was married. I got married in the middle of that. And so Monterey is the most beautiful place in the world. So it was a great, great opportunity to live there as well.
Any highlight or memory of your trips around Europe or time spent in Germany?
Yeah, I skied 20 times while I was there. So I got in the Alps and skied 20 times. I mean, nobody gets to ski that often unless you live there.
Yeah.
And so we even got to ski on a glacier. We skied two weekends apart in June. So we drove down early June and then middle of June. We thought we were really cool skiing on this glacier, which is basically just ground up ice. Like it's skiing on an ice cube that's been ground up basically. But we thought we were pretty cool. And I had a buddy of mine, Dan Dawson, who was a medic in the same company I was in. And Dan and I skied everywhere together. And so I've got these very, very fond memories of spending a lot of times on the slopes. The duty was fine. You know, the military stuff was fine. I got to shoot some cool stuff. And we were in a tank battalion, so we get heavy equipment. We spent plenty of time in the German countryside. But my favorite times were getting out, seeing the German, you know, seeing the economy, as we called it, and really traveling around the country. Made it to Hamburg, too, very north Germany.
Yeah.
I wish I'd gotten on a boat and gone across into Sweden or Norway or, you know, gone over to Denmark. I never even made it to Belgium, which I wish I could have gotten over there. But I got enough traveling in the 2.5 years that I was there. It was fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant. And so once you completed your service, and then you moved to Omaha.
Yeah, we did. So started a family and got married in 89, had a couple kids there in Fort Ord when we were there. Packed the kids up, and we had family out here in Omaha. We could not, as getting out of the military, there's no way I could afford. And even in those days, California was ridiculous, from a cost of living standpoint. So we moved out to Omaha, and I started as a bank teller at a bank, making $6.15 an hour, which even in 92 was not enough for a family, and we really struggled.
Now, How many children did you have already?
We had a third as soon as we got here.
Wow.
So five of us living on $6.15 an hour was not, I realized, hey, you know, in the military, you're a little insulated from that. They take care of everything, and you don't really know, like an hourly rate doesn't matter. So, but I came here to go to school. And so, school started quickly and the GI Bill kicked in. And so we could survive. It was a little sketchy there for a while. I thought, oh, how are we going to, if we did everything we could to get government subsidies and just to eat. And so I started at Grace University here that following year to start my degree program. Thought I was going to do some work in the ministry. I thought that's a Christian liberal arts school. Was headed towards youth or pastoral ministry or something along those lines.
It seems to be like a completely different orientation from the ideas you had going into the military.
Yeah.
I was wondering what led that kind of...
When I was in the military, I had gotten involved with a group called Cadence International, and they were kind of a parachurch organization that worked with military. But by the way, saves a lot of guys' lives because they get over there, they get far away from home. In those days, you know, it was $1 a minute to talk on the phone. There was no such thing as the internet. You couldn't send email. When you lived overseas, you were truly far away from home. I mean, In today's world, I can FaceTime with anybody in the world. We do these webcasts here at Gallup, and I regularly do them in Australia and Singapore and in India and China. And we don't even bat an eye. In those days, it was super far. Mail was 2.5 weeks to get, you know, it was hard. So this organization works
Remind
with
me
military.
The name, sorry?
It's called Cadence International. Still out there. They work with military. They create these hospitality houses, home away from home. It was so instrumental in me having a place to go that was friendly and kind, and that I could really have a positive environment to go to. Because the military, living in the barracks, not necessarily the most positive environment of all times. And so. I thought I was so touched and so moved by this organization that I thought I would do it. I would return that and I would get ministry training and then we would go back to that. I'd go back to that organization and work it. That ended up never working out, but that was kind of the genesis of like, well, maybe I'll get some, maybe I'll get some Bible college education, which looking forward now as a manager, man, Bible college is awesome for managers because it teaches you how to deal with people. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all about,
I don't know anything about Bible college. So.
Well, it's a lot of what I took was studying the Bible, right? So Set that aside for a second, but everything else is all the human side of things, like counseling and dealing with people and people's lives and spiritual conditions and how people, the church, so to speak, is all about humans. And so we learned to deal with, and I did a lot of work with people, and I learned a lot about how to work with people. Well, that's what management is.
Yeah.
It's really just working with people and people's lives and taking care of them and making sure they've got what they need and all those things, right, that you have to do as a manager. So I didn't realize at the time that was setting me up for the future, which would be in management. And then the tech stuff, I found I worked through school. I worked in the bank for a while. I left the bank. I worked for this computer store, Computer Renaissance, and I found my niche, right? This was where I went, oh, why has it taken me 10 years to get to computers? And I just exploded, and the bank hired me back, and, one thing led to another. And
so the aspect of the computers that was really working that you found out was what, managing IT systems, or how would you call
systems,
it?
System integration for the most part, right? Help desk, started in the help desk. Took over their CRM system and kind of administrated that, moved over to their data warehouse and help them administrate
so
that.
So slow down and explain to people who don't really understand how all this stuff, what it actually is. So CRM systems, what does it mean?
Our customer relationship management system, as far as being able to handle, we use that internally for anybody who had problems with their computers and, so a help desk, like, when your computer breaks and you call the help desk.
Like the IT Crowd, the TV show.
Yeah. Just like it.
Yeah.
Just like it. And so I was one of those guys. I started, going out and fixing computers. And then they said, hey, we've got this system that helps us track all this stuff in a big company. Would you administrate it? And so that was a matter of making sure the system is running and it's working and it's integrated, right? And so I found, man, I really like doing this. And then the bank, has tons of data. And so they wanted to build this big data warehouse. And so they embarked on this $1 million, a year, program to build a data warehouse. And the team lead invited me. He's like, hey, it'd be great. We need some help. Could you come over? And so for 4 years, I got to work on this data warehouse. Well, basically I think about this. If data is these bits of information, I would package them up and then deliver them to different departments around the company and say, okay, here's your data and here's your data and here's your data. And so an integration role because we had to integrate with other systems in the company to make it work. So for me, really enjoyed it. And it was just a great time. That bank got purchased by another bank and my job got eliminated. And so I ended up at doing a technology project management for a while, which is something completely different than the integration stuff that I had done. But it'd been a good time because it taught me, maybe I'm not the greatest project manager in the world. But it led to this job here at Gallup, where they hired me in 2007.
So interesting, just like back on the data stuff and the data warehousing and management, because just like you were saying that some people think that the startups just started recently and it's actually been around for ages. There's a lot of talk these days about, the big data buzzword, right? That's being bandied around. And it's to me, it's something similar. I mean, I'm like confirm you can, but it sounds like data and banks have been trying to integrate like massive amounts of data for a long time. The word big data is just, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we had big data systems, before there was big data, as we pushed. the technology we use to manage the big data has gotten very, very different because of what we've learned. But ideas are still the same. As an example, in the bank, it took us 3 or 4 days to close the books on the bank every single month, which was a lot of time and a lot of people's effort to get it done. We got that down to 4 hours by the time we had, with using the data warehouse and automated processes and technology, we took it from 4 days to 4 hours. That's significant, right?
Yeah. When you think about it. And that's a good story. It sells well, you know.
Great ROI when you think about the hours spent to get that done and the accuracy. Plus, we could balance the bank every day within 30 minutes. So every morning we would run these processes and we could literally balance the entire bank. This is $260 million. I can't remember anymore. Let's say a lot of money.
Yeah.
We balanced to the penny every morning. And so it was, and it's weird because there were some mornings it was off. And you'd be like, okay, we got to find, as a teller, you know, you'd learn to balance your drawer every day. And so you're maybe dealing with $10,000 or $15,000. Well, when you're dealing with millions, or in some cases, maybe billions of dollars, and you think you can use a data warehouse or this, you know, these databases to balance to the penny every single day. That's incredibly powerful when it comes to financial accountability.
Yeah, yeah. And before we get to the Gallup stuff, because I don't really know much about it, and I had to go look on the map and look at Wikitravel a little bit about Omaha, Nebraska, because aside from the vague idea that it's in the middle, I didn't really know much about it.
Yeah. When we're out recruiting, so when we're bringing people, recruiting is another one of my jobs here at Gallup.
Okay.
When we're out recruiting, I always tell international students, take a map of the United States, fold it in half, and then fold it in half again, open it up, and where the lines cross. Well, it's really Lawrence, Kansas, but it's Omaha's pretty close, is what we say all the time. So it's we're smack dab in the middle of the country. I think the best kept secret in the United States, as far as a city that we're about 1 million in the metro, we have everything everybody else has, you know, all the restaurants, all the malls, all those other things. We're not missing much from that standpoint. Great museums, great history. We have a bunch of Fortune 500 companies here. We have Warren Buffett, for God's sakes. I mean, one of the richest guys in the world lives right here in Omaha, which is
pretty
cool.
Actually, as a anecdote snippet, that apparently it's the city per capita in the U.S. that has the most millionaires.
Yeah, it's very, very possible. A lot of money in Omaha. It's a big banking center. It's a big agriculture center. It's a huge insurance center. And so we have tons. Yeah, there's a lot of money here in Omaha. We're out in the middle of nowhere, though. 8 hours to Denver, 8 hours to Chicago, 3 hours to Kansas City. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere, but very low unemployment right now. I think we're in the 2 or 3% unemployment rate. Mm-hmm. Great schools, great people. People are friendly here. It's just it was a great place. I didn't know that when I moved here back in 92, but I'm not sure I'd want to leave. I mean, I can get on an airplane and be in Denver skiing in 2 hours.
Yes. I was going to say there's mountains not too far away, right?
Yeah. Not far at all. Jump on. We have a small little airport here that just is very, very fast. Jump on a plane. It's a 45-minute flight to Denver. I can get off, rent a car, drive to Breckenridge in an hour, and be skiing. So it's, you know, it's one. I can be in Chicago in an hour. I regularly make that jump to Chicago and then on to the East Coast. So we can be to Chicago in an hour. So it's not, it's, you know, 3 hours to the East Coast, 4 hours to the West Coast. You can kind of be, it's 2 hour, an hour and 15 minutes down to Dallas. You can kind of be, for my job recruiting, we recruit from all these different schools all around the United States. So it makes it very easy for me to get to the locations that I need to and then come home.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, because this is a bigger conversation about Gallup and a bit of an overview of the organization. And I found number one, because there are a lot of people listening to this who work in marketing and advertising as I do, and just like backtracking to the origins of the Gallup organization as a research company that started in the 30s. One of the biggest link on the advertising side that I found is that the fact that David Ogilvy, quite legendary advertising figure, was the vice president for Gallup for 10 years, from 1938 to 1948. Now, anyway, so that's for anybody who didn't know that, you can go look it up. But nowadays, Gallup is quite different. I don't know how different, but can you give us a bit of an overview? I guess like the question is, who's Don Clifton, who purchased Gallup after the founder passed away, I believe, right?
Or, yeah, George. Yeah, after George Gallup passed away, back in the '80s, the boys, his sons, took over the organization for a few years. Didn't really want to run a company, and so began to look to kind of sell it. And you know, survey research, we ask a lot of questions, right? That's what we do. That's what in the '80s, that's what Gallup was best known for. And we've done all kinds of surveys from 1935 until the '80s. They did all kinds of surveys
because it's very known for political polls in the U.S. But also there was a lot of market research of all kinds, or
tons. Yeah. In Hollywood, we used to do movies. We've done television, all those, any question that could be asked basically is what Gallup did. And it was actually in those days, it was a disparate group of companies, the Gallup organization in those days. George kind of gave out that right to use that name all around the world. And that'll become important a little bit later in the story. And so, okay. You had all these, let's just say maybe 35, 40 organizations around the world doing business in the name of Gallup, but not necessarily all the same company in those days. So in the '80s, when the boys took over from their dad, and then there was a small survey research company here in Lincoln, Nebraska, just down the road called SRI. And Don and his son Jim, part of that, they've been kind of building this, and they did a lot of teacher on how to hire. So it was kind of a talent company and how to hire people. They tried all kinds of different things too. They were trying to figure out how to make this thing work, right? And when Gallup came up and Jim moved to Washington, and long story short, in the end, they won the deal to buy Gallup. So SRI in 1988, SRI bought Gallup from the Gallup family. And two companies merged in those days to become one, and they kept the Gallup name. But really the essence of who SRI was in those days, and this entrepreneurial spirit of building new, building new things, new innovative things. One of those, of course, was done, what Don was building was StrengthsFinder, right? And so for 40 years, he'd been doing research on the effects of positive psychology on people. And they found during the Korean War, when you interviewed the veterans, the prisoners of war that came out of there, the difference between the ones that made it and those that didn't, the ones that made it had had some kind of positive experience or positive something to hold on to. And we began to take that to schools and say, what would happen if we encouraged kids instead of yelled at them? Yeah. Right. For that, what's the effect of positive psychology on these? And so he began to see that everybody has these talents, and they could be grouped into these talent themes. And then those themes could be discovered through questions. And so that was the birth of the StrengthsFinder. And so in the late 90s, early 2000, they released that first version of the Clifton StrengthsFinder, which would give you what we call your top five themes. They may be words like a learner or activator or achiever or competition or those kinds of words. And there's this framework in which they're around. They really give you some clues to the talent, things that you're good at. Yeah. And so that has been, when we think of, we've sold almost 14 million of those StrengthsFinder assessments in the last 10 years. The pace of those people taking those assessments is accelerating, not decelerating. You'd think after 10 years, like most books have kind of a life cycle. They go up and they go down, or ideas even go up or go down. This went up and it kind of plateaued about 1 million a year for like the last 5 years. And now it's increasing. We're the number one, StrengthsFinder 2.0 is the number one best-selling book on Amazon of all time now at this point, as well as it has been the number one for the last 3 years. Now, this year, we're slipping a little bit. It's number four right now, as of today.
So do you know much about like how it came about or how they developed? So through a lot of questions and a lot of interviews, right? And from what I understand,
tons of research.
And then, but do you know much about like how, out of all this research, how they said, okay, well, we are identified that there's this list of 34 strengths that people may have. Do you know much or anything about?
Well, it's incredibly boring because it's all science, right? And so it's interview after interview. I think 400,000 interviews, something like that. The best, if you're really interested in the kind of the nerdiness behind the way we built this and all the research that went into it, the best thing to do would be to Google StrengthsFinder technical report. We have a full report. It's a full 35-page report. that's out there.
I'll add the link in the show notes then.
That you can read and go through, and it's got all the validations and all the data and all we go through for it. I know this, as we talk to people who have taken StrengthsFinder, and we ask them after they've taken it, and we say, how close are, you know, there's 34 themes and we give you your top five in intensity order. Yeah. And so we say, how close, how much does this match you? And almost in every case, they're like, oh man, this is exactly like me. Yeah. Now, that's not magic. That's you answering some questions with a whole bunch of science behind it that helps us find these themes. The magic in StrengthsFinder is you applying them. Right. Yes. This is a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, well, I already knew this about myself. Well, awesome. Now, how do you take that framework and apply it in a way that makes you more productive? That's magic.
Right? And that's one of the things I'm definitely interested in talking more about. And this is just probably paraphrasing some of what you said already. But one of the ways in which I explain it, because I mean, I appreciate those tests. I took it and I'll come back to that. But one of the ways that I explain it, and I like that it's easy to explain, is that just we tend to, as human beings, naturally focus on overcoming our weaknesses rather than looking at what are we good at and actually cultivating our strengths. And I think that's the main essence of what StrengthsFinder is about. And
now you nailed it. Yeah, right on.
Yeah. And so then you just go online, you do this test. And would you call it a psychometric test? Is that what it's called? Or
you could. Yeah, you could. I think in that sense, it's, well, I always say when we encourage people to take it, it's a test about you.
Okay.
Right. It's one of these things. It's going to ask you some questions, some paired questions. Do you prefer this or do you prefer that? Do you like to do it? Do you do it this way or do you do it that way? And sometimes it's like, do you like red or do you like oranges?
Yeah.
Not orange, but red or oranges.
Right.
And you're like, what's the difference? Well, hey, there's a lot of there. We're asking these questions to try and get to the heart of these talent themes, right? All about you, what you're good at. I think the key is it gives you a framework, in which to really discuss. And like you said, for me, you know, going all the way back to my military days, you know, I took a job as a mechanic and it's very repetitive and it's, you know, that's not my best. That's not what I'm good at. I'm better at innovation and thinking about the way things could be in the future and organizing events and working with people as a mechanic necessarily in that role. That didn't necessarily set me up. And I wasn't bad at it. I mean, it was okay. But when I got in technology, my career skyrocketed because I was working in areas and doing things that really interested me, right? That I was really good at, that I was naturally gifted at. And so it's exploiting those natural gifts and those natural tendencies. It's like trying to change the course of a river, right? Let it run its course. In fact, dig it deeper so it can stay in that channel and it'll be a lot easier to do. So that's kind of. Yeah, that's kind of the essence of.
So let's illustrate a little bit. Can you talk us through like what your top five are, so that it gives a few examples?
Yeah, you bet. So arranger, woo, maximizer, communication, and activator. Right, that's what we call our top five from that standpoint. When I think, so let's apply them to the roles that I currently do now. So I'm a podcaster for Gallup. We do. Yep. I do this week, actually, I'm doing five webcasts a day or five through the week. So one a day all week. So I actually get to podcast for my job, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, which is, we'll come back to that because it's one of the reasons I got in touch with you in the first place, actually.
Yeah, it's incredible that I get to do this hobby. I've turned this hobby into my job, right? But that's woo and communication. Like woo is winning over others. It's an influencing thing, right? It's helping. It's winning. It's influencing. It's convincing people to do things. It fits in my recruiting role as well, right? Woo is the essence of sales. In a lot of ways, it's going out and telling people you should come work at Gallup, or you should consider the StrengthsFinder, or you should whatever, right? That influence theme, that's woo. I use communication. Listen, I never get sick of hearing myself talk, so I don't mind. Like people, if sometimes I have to talk all day.
Yeah.
For some people, that would wipe them out. That would be the worst day of their life. Like they would get nervous about every single time they have to get up in front, and they'd be awash. For me, I'm like, bring it on. The more I can talk during the day, the better. And so that's that communication theme that I have that allows me to do that. We have a high school and college internship program that we've built. I have a teammate, Jody Kennedy, that I work with that, and her and I have built this college and high school internship program here. It's a lot of arranging. It's a lot of, you know, when you think about an internship, we go all over the country and hire these kids. We have to bring them back for a summer. They have to get here. We have to house them. We have to come up with programs for them. That's the essence of arranging, right? That's that arranger theme. One of my friends says it's like keeping 100 ping pong balls underneath the water, right? You're constantly trying to, right? And for some people, that's too many details. That's too much stuff going on. They want to do everything right and perfect. And in a setting, I have 40 interns coming this summer to be here. It's a lot of moving parts, right? For some people, that would be crushing and deflating. For me, I get energized every day, like, oh man. Now, I'm 2 weeks away from those kids showing up, right? And I'm gripping a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But that arranger plays so nicely into it. And then that middle one's called Maximizer, right? It's a ranking. It's a quality assurance theme. It's this idea of making things better or recognizing, making lists of things and ranking them in order. Everything I do gets maximized. So every year when we get done with the internship program, I say, all right, how are we going to do it better next year? Every webcast that I do, when we get done, I'm like, how could I do that better the next time? And so we do all kinds of things like, okay, let's take the best of this and let's do more of that. And we'll cut out the things we're not good at. So that in a snippet. Oh, I didn't mention Activator. Activator is behind everything. Activator is getting things started. I am a starter. I get horribly bored in the maintaining process. I have to get people to help me with that. But I like to start things. So I started the internship program here. Right. I started some of the recruiting stuff that we do. I've started all the webcasting that we do. I'm a starter. That's what I like to do. So that's how my top five kind of currently fit into my roles.
Got it. And so, let's go over a little bit of your roles. I think the official title you have is a technology manager, or? You do a bunch of stuff, right?
So I do just talked about it. In my role, I kind of use the title, whatever's most appropriate for kind of the role that I'm in. I use IT manager because in recruiting, it helps for the students to kind of know that's kind of what I do. That's the job they're looking to get in. But you could call me. Titles don't matter here at Gallup. Responsibilities do. So what am I responsible to do? That's more important.
Right. And so you're responsible for recruiting new starters and
mostly college students that are coming out.
In any kind of departments or?
No, mostly for technology.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Mostly for technology. Then I also responsible for the internship programs. So we have high school kids on our campus for 12 weeks during the school year. They come in on Saturdays and then they have a 6-week program in the summer. We have a traditional college program that has kids here for the summer. I have 14 college kids that are on campus right now, part-time while they're in school. So I manage all those resources. I also have a team in Washington, D.C. that I manage. So there's some folks out there that are doing, there's a couple interns and a full-timer that are out there in the Washington, D.C. area. And then I hire for that as well. So sometimes I'm out in the Washington, D.C. area helping them hire. I stay pretty busy.
Yes, it sounds like it. And the other thing you work on, obviously, as you mentioned, is the webcasts and podcasts for Gallup, talking about the strengths finders and coaching with it, which I think may well be useful in talking to what you mentioned, which is, and I've heard that from a few other people that I know, and the people who introduced me to the strength-based test in the first place, which is some people do the test and they're like, oh yeah, it's great. It looks like myself. And then you just kind of like forget about it because it feels like you just read an astrology thing or you just actually more than astrology. It's one of the things I have, not against, but criticism of, for example, Myers-Briggs that is kind of interesting, but to my knowledge, or maybe I didn't really know about this, there doesn't seem to be much that to action it afterwards. Whereas if you start digging into the strengths and the way that you can coach around it, it's very interesting. And I really started finding out about that when I started listening to your webcasts, actually.
Yeah. And we created the webcast. We're trying to create a global movement for strengths. So it's just not a one and done, but it's something you get your top five and then you think about them every day in how you do your job, right? They don't tell you what to do. They tell you how to do it. That's kind of, that's the way we go about it. Well, one and done, if it's just a framework you do one time, you go, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you never do it again. No benefit to you, to be honest with you. You might as well not have taken it. In fact, it inoculates to the strengths, right? It's one of those things you think, well, I've had it. I'm done. I've done that. Well, so how do you create a global movement? Keep everybody on the same page at the same time and keep this thing going. Well, blogging and podcasting are the best way I found to get that done. And so I begged 3 years ago. I said, hey, would you let me do this? I think I have a way of taking our stuff through this thing called, we call podcast. And they're like, what? What's a podcast? It took me a while to convince them to get it done, but we got that rolling and we started with our coaches. We knew if you are going to have a strengths movement, people just won't do it naturally. Everybody needs a coach. And so we needed to train a million coaches around the world to handle this effort. And that's, StrengthsFinder is one of those components. There's other tools out there. We are big believers in what we do, but we have coaches that coach on a variety of platforms and systems. How do we train in a million coaches and keep them all going the same direction and encouraged? And so we came up with this podcast called Called to Coach.
The program to be a coach with the methodology already existed, I guess?
Yeah, we had that in place, although we refined it 3 years ago and really systematized it. And so coaches can come. You can get a Gallup certification in strength coaching from us. 5-day course. The information is on our site, courses.gallup.com, all kinds of stuff that's out there. Yep. If you have any information, give us a call. We don't need to waste time necessarily talking about it. But
just to get the basics.
Yeah. There's a ton there, right? But so you can get certified as a coach, but we have coaches that we'd love for everybody to be certified. It just doesn't necessarily work for everybody, but there's coaches out there who use StrengthsFinder who have taken on our training, but we are trying to develop this network of coaches that will work with the billion. That's our goal, is to have. So when you say we have 14 million people who've taken StrengthsFinder, you go, man, 14 million of anything is great. Not compared to the 7 billion who are on the planet. Right. Yes. And so our goal is a billion. And it's a big goal, big audacious goal. We think we can hit it.
Okay. And so the first main show is called To Coach, and you have a conversation and feature one of the Gallup coaches on each one episode. Is that the idea?
Yeah. We basically interview one of our certified coaches and say, what are you doing? What's working? What's in, you know, and they're all unique. I think we've done almost 100 of those now. And all those coaches, they all have a unique story to tell. Yeah. And so it's really, it's just storytelling.
Yeah.
What do you, through the process of an interview, just like what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Right. It's just telling a story. And so we have done a bunch of those called to coaches and they're all available. They're all on our YouTube channel. If you search called to coach, the C-A-L-L-E-D, called to coach on Google, you'll see. If you see my picture, that's the bad. See way too much of me.
And there's the theme Thursdays as well. Was that born out of Call to Coach, or like separately created?
Yeah. So Kurt Liesfeld, who was one of our coaches, passed away last year, but he was one of our coaches. And he said we were interviewing him for a Call to Coach, and he goes, you know, we ought to have this show where we go deep into each one of the themes one at a time and really cover them in detail. We ought to call it Theme Thursday. And at the chat room, because we do them live with the chat room, the chat room just exploded. I have never seen it like that before or after. Yes, we have to. So 2 weeks later, we launched Theme Thursday. And the whole concept is each one of these 34 themes we dig in. Yep. It is that show. We're in the second season of it now. So we've gone through all 34 once. And so if you've taken StrengthsFinder and you want to get a deep dive on any of your themes, we've done them at least once.
Yep.
And we're going through season 2 right now. And so we may have done them twice.
Yeah. I'm finding them really, really useful and extremely interesting.
Right? I learn a ton. Yeah. I'm the tech guy. I'm the host. I'm the communicator. I'm not the coach from that standpoint. And Micah, who's doing it with me, she is dynamite. And so I learn every week. I learn a ton from it. It makes me a better person. Yeah. We have these available and folks can download them and listen to them. You can subscribe like a podcast or an RSS feed. You can stay up to date. That show, Theme Thursday, I get almost an email a day now from someone saying, thank you for what you do on Theme Thursday. It's incredibly powerful and incredible engagement.
Very, very useful. Very
happened
useful.
By accident, right?
So, that's the thing. Yeah, definitely. And I had a couple of questions as well. And these, I think they're like, because I heard it was covered randomly in a few other episodes, either Theme Thursday or Call to Coach that I've been listened to. But it'd be great to get your point of view. You might have heard something about this because in my case, so I first heard about StrengthsFinders in 2006 when there was the first book that was, and it was, well, still a book. It was not online. Now Discover Your Strengths. And when I did it at that time, my top strengths was ideation and then input, connectedness, adaptability, maximizer. And that was very useful because it was the moment I was looking into transitioning and changing my career. And it helped me shape a story for why I would be good to work in marketing and brand strategy. And I still to this day like use a lot of in my input for doing market research and ideation for running brainstorms, etc. And I did the test again when the 2.0 came out in 2010. And I had left. I had worked for several years in one company and then was leaving. And I didn't really think. I just thought, oh, it's a new edition. I should do the 2.0. But probably some kind of different tests. And it's interesting that I found out later that 3 out of my 5 shifted. And only recently, like a few months ago, you can go online and unlock the 1 to 34.
Yeah.
And I noticed that 2 that I had in 2006 that are adaptability and maximizer, are now in my 14-15 position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was wondering what you knew about how much they shift when you're changing your focus or career or things like that.
It's a great question and super fair, right? We get it all the time when people, especially, One of those things, you took it far enough apart. One of the dangerous things about StrengthsFinder is if you start to understand the language of it, you go to take the assessment again. So say you take it this year and then you do a whole bunch of work around it.
Yeah.
You could take it. If you took it 6 months later, you can kind of start seeing the themes and the questions we ask, right? You kind of know the key, so to speak. And so you can manipulate it. And so our recommendation is that you only take it once for a lot of people. Now we get this question all the time. Well, but it's been years ago. Could I have changed? No, absolutely. There's no magic in the assessment in the sense that however you answer the questions, they correlate to some algorithms based on the research that we've done, and they give you your themes. Some of these themes are pretty close to each other. So when we think of input and learner, right, those are two themes that are pretty close. One is the way you do it. When I am a learner, I like to ingest all, you know, I like the act of learning, taking classes and having people talk to me. When I'm input, it's the actual bits of data that I like collecting. Well, that seems pretty similar. You could have taken the assessment based on the questions you asked and maybe learner dropped down, but input moved up just by the way you answered the questions.
Yeah.
I always tell people, don't get hung up on that. It's the framework about you.
Yeah.
And so, and over from 2006 to 2012, was that the difference? 6 years?
2006 to 2010.
10. So 4 years in there.
Yeah.
It's possible that you now, because of life experiences, you answer those questions a little bit differently now because you've learned some things about yourself. It's possible that you've honed those of understanding your own talent themes. And so that new report, if you look at it and you go, yeah, this is really close. This is like, take it. Like I always tell, just run with it.
Yeah.
And then I've taken it three times too, and some stuff has moved around in it. I always just kind of claim whatever works for me. Like what do I need? How do I need to, because it's a performance enhancement tool, right? It's how do I make a better version of myself?
Yes.
If we get hung up on the labels, we've missed the point, right? Yeah. What we're trying to do is what's best for me.
Yeah. And this is what I like as well. And so it's something that's important, I think, to mention is that it's not to be taken to the letter. You know, like a holy book of some kind, right? It's not right. about that.
It's not, it's not ordained. It's infallible. You know, going back to my all my religious education. You know, at the same time, we like to emphasize that we've done a ton of research, and so these labels, these talent themes that we give you are accurate and spot on in a lot of cases. But run with it, right? What helps you make a better version of yourself? That's what's most important, because we can't do anything along those lines. Only you can do that.
Yeah. And this is something I found out, because like in my newer one, I had just spent several years working in digital marketing. And so talking with brand clients and marketers about how you can be using technology to better communicate with people. And my number two is futuristic.
Yep.
And that seemed to make sense to me because I've always been into science fiction books and fantasy and like imagining, you know, the new ideas of how we can be using like this idea of depicting that's what futuristic is about for the people who don't really know the test. It's about painting these visions of the future and communicating them with other people and inspiring others. And that's what I liked is like my number one is ideation still. And it's all about connecting things that don't seem to be connected together and coming up with new ideas. And coming up with new ideas about the future specifically.
Yeah. So we have this philosophy. We say name it, claim it, and aim it. That's kind of the essence of when you hear these themes. And so what you just did is a naming experience, right? And like, okay, here's what it is, right? Yeah. And then the claiming experience is here's how it plays out in me. And that might be you sitting down and saying, futuristic for me is this. Now, we give you a whole bunch of reports and we give you some clues and there's stuff in the book and there's stuff on the webpage and you can highlight and cross out, right? Again, it's all about you.
Yeah.
Where most people don't go then is the aim it, right? Is then saying, okay, now that I know this about myself, how do I take these superpowers? And I think they are. I think they're your superpowers. How do I take these superpowers and point them at something that makes me more productive?
Yeah.
Right? That makes me happier.
Yeah.
That makes me more successful. That's the real essence of it. And so I spend a lot of time talking about this on these webcasts is that sometimes we get in a name it, name it, name it. All we want to do is talk about the themes, right? Well, I've got my activator and it makes me do things. Well, what are you actually doing, Jim? Like, you know, what are you doing? How are you arranging your life in a way, or how are you setting yourself up to be successful in your current role doing with your themes and stuff, you know, right? You have to actually do something to have it make a difference.
Absolutely. So, you know. And that's a combination that's talked about in the, in the webcast before, but this is something that I've discovered using the webcast that I, and I found out I've been doing that recently. So there's different domains or categories for the strengths, and one of them is executing. It's about getting stuff done. And I have one of the most common ones, according to some of the numbers I've heard, which is responsibility, which is taking ownership of what you say you're going to do and your commitments to others. And like this thread of me wanting to help others has always been around, or saying yes too much, et cetera. But on the other hand, if I look at it from a strengths perspective, I do things if I commit them to others. So I started making promises to others of things that I want to do myself, because otherwise I just don't get them done. I can happily sit down on a beach somewhere and have ideas about stuff that go nowhere for a very long time. And the podcast and also my weekly newsletter that I write are completely out of this, because I now have an audience. It's not a big audience yet, but I have an audience that are expecting them every week. And because it's like a promise I've made. So that's one of the reasons that I'm driven to keep doing it.
And what's really powerful is if you and I are working together, and I know that, because responsibility is very, very low for me, right? Discipline and responsibility are in my bottom four.
Right. Okay.
And so, because I've unlocked, you know, I work here at Gallup, I can see all 34. So as a manager or as a team member with you, knowing that you have high responsibility, and by the way, your best day ever is when you can get done those things you said you're going to get done, right? That's a great feeling for you. As a manager, I'd set you up in a role to be able to do that every single day and get everything else out of the way. Or as a team member, I would give you things to be responsible for that I obviously can't. And I would not take ownership for them. I would say, hey, you take them. I'm going to, you know, use me to be the upfront guy. You know, use me to be the ramrod. Use me to be those things that those power instruments, those tools of construction or destruction. But I need you to make sure I'm in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. That's the power of partnership. We wrote this book called The Power of Two. And I really think strengths is powerful in the individual, but its power is exponential in the context of teams. Mm-hmm. And so it's just incredible when we put two people together and we compare strengths. And then I start doing the things you're not good at and you start doing the things I'm not good at.
Yeah.
That's power.
It is. And I've just started doing that with several of my friends. So on the inside of the website, so if you go check it out, there's like the Gallup Strengths, and you can download just a very simple Excel spreadsheet where you can put everybody's strengths, whether it's a team management thing. But I've started doing it with a few friends where we've all done the strengths. So like, you know, friends, we support each other for different things, but now I know who to call for what.
Yeah, no, it gives you these clues. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's very obvious. You're like, oh man, I should be doing it this. One of the things we've seen this work really well in is actually families. Okay. So have families take Strengths Finder, and then they put a family grid together and they start looking at, you know, oh, hey, this and that. And it really starts explaining, especially with families that have maybe difficult dynamics, really starts explaining some of those things. You know, we get new family members through marriage or whatever, add them into the grid, post that on the wall, do whatever, right?
Yeah, and you can play around with it. It's fun. I like that you can make it fun, and the descriptions are fun as well. And it's good.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, right, it's just about making better versions of ourselves. And so it's, you know, not magic or mystical.
Yeah.
It's just about making better versions. Who wouldn't want to do something like that, right? I mean, and you know, you think about it from a cost perspective, $15, right, for most people to be able to do this. Very, very affordable.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. I usually close down with a few of the cool down questions, as I call it. So of course it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. There's got to be some ice cream question.
Love it.
Favorite ice cream flavor, just to get started.
Oh, chocolate mint for sure. I could crush a whole box of chocolate mint ice cream.
It's the most common flavor everybody's talked about. It's amazing.
It's delicious. It is so good.
I think I remember. Is Omaha also known for, because Omaha is known for like college, what is it?
College baseball, College World Series is
baseball,
what we have
college
here.
World Series. Mm-hmm. And there's like, it's a big party time of the year, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. I mean, a million people just kind of descend on Omaha. We have an ice cream place called Zesto's that's world famous. And Zesto's, the stadium has recently moved, and so Zesto's moved their facility as well. It's not the same as it was, because they were an old, crappy old building that would only be open during the College World Series, but the ice cream was so good. So Zesto's is the famous place.
Are they known for like doing a crazy amount of flavors, or like high quality, fewer flavors, or anything in particular? Or
you know, it's just really, your average ice cream place. They're known for being open during the World Series, and everybody, it becomes a little bit of folklore, right? You know, you have those places that you just, everybody would, you know, you'd get out of the game and you'd walk over to Zesto's. And so it just became that, it kind of became that place.
Yeah. So you might have seen another big topic for the podcast is gaming. So, and you know, I'm a role-playing tabletop gamer. We talked about being a geek in the 80s. Did you play any role-playing games?
Yeah, well, my favorite, Command & Conquer. So if you were and it was the very first game. This would have been 90s by the time I played Command & Conquer.
That's like a real-time strategy game, isn't it?
Right, and it's multiplayer. And So I was one of the first to have a home network set up where the kids could play. And so we would I'd put the kids in the basement, and I would play upstairs, and I would just crush them. And I'd let them believe they were going to win, and then I would just come in with the whole army and crush them. And I could hear them complaining downstairs, you know. So yeah, it was when they were younger, we played a lot. Now they got on Xbox and just blew me away. Like, I can't do the whole multi-finger thing. But as a kid in the 80s, played a lot of what's that one where they're firing missiles? Missile Command. Okay. It's 7-Eleven. So we would go down to the local, you know, in these days, the pinball or the machines, the games.
Arcade games, yeah.
The arcade games were in convenience stores. And so we'd go down and we'd play a lot of that. Yeah, that was me for sure. Yeah.
I was so bad. I used to love the strategy games like Command & Conquer, but I had a couple of friends who were way better than I was. So in competitive settings, I would always be massacred.
I could only beat my 7-year-old. That's all. If I played anybody, an adult, I would always lose.
And so part of the different gadget podcasts that you have, so you have a home server one, and there's a few others you contribute. There's gadgets. And is it particular like home gadgets or any kind of electronics you look at, or?
Well, on the Average Guy Network, we have one called Home Gadget Geeks. That's kind of that's the flagship that we talk about gadgets in your home automation, phones, anything that goes in your car, those kinds of things. We get startup guests that are on. So recently we had the guys from Anana Box. They make a VPN device that you can carry with you. We've had guys from Shelfie on. They're the ones.
I don't even know what that does. So it's a VPN you carry with you. What is that?
Yeah. So it's a VPN that you can attach to wirelessly. You connect it, and then you can surf safely. Because like we know that when you go into Starbucks and you use their Wi-Fi, that is not a secure connection, right? Yeah. That the most people get hacked or get phished in those kind of open Wi-Fi networks. So this is a device, Anana, A-N-O-N-A. So like anonymous. But it's Anana Box. We had those guys on. They're a little startup in Chico, California, and we love the startup in our gadget stuff. And their product is a little gadget. It's literally this big, and you connect it to your PC, and you can surf safely on the web through a VPN. But we do all kinds of startups. But I also have members. So this week I have Paul Barron coming on. He's one of our listeners and community contributors, and he's going to come on, and we're going to talk about, you know, his gadgets and some of the things he's been doing. He's got he's big into virtualization. So that's another technology where you don't run it like Windows. You wouldn't run it locally on your PC. You're going to run it in the cloud type deal. It's going to be run off site. So we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about that. So that's Home Gadget Geeks. I have one coming back called Cyber Frontiers, where I have students at the University of Maryland who are in their cybersecurity and defense program that come in and talk about security and big data, which is really cool. It's a little nerdier, but my audience loves that. Then I contribute over Home Server Show at homeservershow.com. There's one called Surface Geeks that I'm on from time to time. My favorite one, or one of my favorite ones to do, is on Saturday mornings, we do Ask the Podcast Coach with Dave Jackson. And so Dave and I take live questions and for an hour talk about the mechanics of podcasting. And since I've been podcasting for a while, he's been doing it, I think, 11 or 12 years, and I think I'm in the 6 or 7. All we do is take questions, and so it's one of those really fun things to do.
Yeah. Given it, well, I've really just started like last year, but like actively, properly since mid-December, so only a few months in, really. And I'm like starting to wonder, you know, what should I be doing to improve or get better people or grow my audience? I think like the main one thing is consistency, but I don't know if there's any, I don't know that there's secrets, but.
There are no secrets. Actually, everything's out there. The key to podcasting, I think, is personality and getting to know people. Like, so you reached out to me. Yeah. That's all it takes, right? How do you get better guests? You continue to network. Create a great program that people want to listen to, and you'll have no problem getting
that's
guests.
That's another interesting one is the editorial. Like, you know, little by little. Well, I mean, I the first one, and it took me months to figure this out, by the way, but getting to the simple solutions, it takes a while. to figure out that, oh, actually, you know what? I really enjoy having these kinds of conversations, and I would listen to this. So let's start there.
Right. Well, what happens? No, you have kind of caught on. If there's a secret, that may be it. You've kind of caught on. If you're doing this and you're having fun, that quality will show through in what you're doing and people will want to be there. You'll also start to attract people like you. This is what I found is in Home Gadget Geeks, we are in our fifth year we're in our sixth year now doing that show. And what I've attracted is a whole bunch of guys that are just like me because they're in the same, you know, they're in the same spot, the middle age, middle income, technology guys, and many of them are systems administrators. They're tech enthusiasts. If I got pictures of them, they would all look literally a lot like me, right? It's one of those kind of things because birds of a feather flock together, right? That's what we say all the time. So you will begin, but you got to let your true personality shine through on these things. Don't try to be somebody you're not. I've listened to podcasts where they try to be, you know, radio voice guy, or they try to be somebody they're not. Don't, just be you. You will attract people. If you're honest and open and you have interesting content, you'll attract people.
Fantastic. So what's super exciting to you on the home gadget front? What's coming up? I read an article about Amazon Echo. That seems exciting, but anything else brand new coming out?
We spend a lot of time now thinking and talking about AI. So artificial intelligence is kind of where things are going. And the Echo is the very beginning. Siri was actually kind of the beginning of that, but the Echo is certainly making a huge jump into the front. And I think when you connect AI to home automation, you get some really, really interesting things. Home automation 2 years ago, super expensive, unaffordable. Today, actually very affordable. It's starting to get to that spot where we're in that Gartner hype cycle where the costs are coming down and the usability is coming up. And so I'm really excited about some of the things that AI will be able to do for us from an efficiency standpoint and make sure that we're in the right place at the right time doing the right things and controlling those things that we don't or can't think about all the time, especially in the areas of home security and heating and fire prevention and some of those kinds of things. There's stuff AI will never be able to replace. There is a lot of stuff it can. So I think when we look at the future around with gadgets, I think that idea, this wearable home automation type space, is we're just beginning to see really cool stuff.
Got it. Cool. Well, that was fantastic. Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you for your time.
Hey, you're very welcome.
Is there anything you want to promote, give a shout out? So there's obviously, I'll put all the links to the different podcasts, all the Average Guy Network, the Gallup podcast as well. Anything or a message to aspiring grads want to join or anything like that?
Yeah, you know what? Just here's what I always say. We say this all the time. Fail early and fail often. Get out there and do some things and try it. I mean, if you're really just beginning in your career, there's so much ahead of you. We put so much pressure on our students and our grads and whatever to have it right the first time. You're just not going to. Like, my story is one of three different careers. And so embrace what you have. Really figure out who you are and what you're best at and then begin to gravitate in those directions. And StrengthsFinder is certainly one of those tools that can help you do it. But no one knows you better than you. Yeah. And so really take a hard look on the inside and figure out, because life is so short. It's not worth working unhappy. Absolutely. So find that job that works for you, even if it's a little bit lower pay, and enjoy what you do.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You bet. You too.
All right. Another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast wrapping up. I hope you enjoyed it. Well, you're listening to this far, so I hope you enjoyed it. Check out Gallup. Check out the StrengthsFinders. I highly recommend it. I know it's not necessarily not usually a sales and promotion kind of podcast, but this is a tool I really enjoy for myself. I found a lot of benefit from it, and it's part of the reason why I wanted to interview Jim, and it was a fantastic guest to have and find out more about how it all works and what happens and how it can be helpful for people. If you enjoyed the episode, I can only encourage you to share it with a friend, post it on social media. Give me a shout on Twitter. I'm @HippoWill. Tell me if you enjoyed it. You can like the Ice Cream for Everyone page on Facebook. If you want to find out more about Ice Cream for Everyone, or there's other episodes of the podcast to check out, of course, you can check out the list on my website or check out the list on any of the podcasting apps you listen to through the RSS feed. And also the Ice Cream Sunday, which is a long-form newsletter that I write and publish, of course, every Sunday. But aside from that, that's about it for now. Have a fantastic morning, end of day, afternoon, evening, good night, whatever time it is for you, and see you next time. Bye.